Welcome to Radio at Firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters. Firehouse.com brings you the leaders of the nation's fire, rescue, and EMS services, the top columnists and educators, and today's most important issues, headlines, and comments. Listen right on your desktop or download and listen on the go to Firehouse.com.
Hello and welcome to podcast number 12 of Near Miss Listen and Learn. I'm your host for the podcast, John Tippett, and thanks to Firehouse.com for making this podcast come to light. I worked as a battalion chief in Montgomery County, Maryland, a suburb of D.C. Retired July 1st to take a deputy chief's job in the city of Charleston Fire Department, South Carolina. Also served as the project manager for the IFC, which manages the National Firefighter Numerous Reporting System. The rest of the folks joining us today are Jim Rist. You've recognized Jim as the frequent voice of our reports. He's a program coordinator with National Programs, has over 35 years of fire service experience in both a volunteer and career service. He's a life member of West Haverstraw Volunteer Fire Department in New York State, as well as a retired federal chief officer from West Point Fire and Emergency Services. Our special guest for this podcast is Mike Wilbur. Many of you know Mike as a subject matter expert on a variety of fire apparatus issues. He's a lieutenant in the Fire Department of New York, founder of Emergency Vehicle Response, which is an apparatus training and consulting company. Mike is a frequent contributor to fire service trade journals and lectures extensively on the subject of apparatus safety. So welcome, Mike.
Thank you very much, Chief.
Also joining us today is Amanda McHenry. Amanda is the program assistant for the National Firefighter Near Miss Reporting System, and you probably recognize Amanda's name from the Report of the Week. So our topic for this episode is seatbelts. Ties in with the 2009 Near Miss Safety Calendar topic for the month of June. And we know that seatbelts are indisputable in their effort to save lives. We also have something else that's indisputable, and that seatbelts and fire apparatus are not always user-friendly and have posed quite a dilemma on a variety of different fronts. In part one of today's podcast, we're going to be looking at reports that address the seatbelt issue in the fire service and then the use of seatbelts. And in part two of the cast, we'll talk to Mike Wilbur and his efforts and the efforts of others to improve seatbelt function in the fire apparatus industry. We hope you're using this time during this week's Fire EMS Safety, Health, and Survival Week to refocus your efforts to ensure that all your members are going home. Our first report today is report number 08506. It comes to us from a combination fire department in FEMA Region 3. Due to the length of the report, it's been edited and excerpted out for this presentation. Jim's going to be reading the excerpted version. You can see the complete report at firefighternearmiss.com. Type in the report number 08506, and the reports are also going to be posted on Radio at Firehouse. Jim?
Thanks, John. The event description. While returning from an incident, I was driving engine 1 back to the station. I was driving due to the fact that I had lost my driver who had upgraded an ambulance for a transport. I had been the unit officer for the shift on engine 1. I was driving back to the station and had exited off at the ramp for a connecting road. Approaching the road, we had a red light. I stopped well before the intersection at the first white stripe indicating the proper stopping area. When the left turn green was indicated, I hesitated, checking intersection clearance before proceeding through. The intersection was clear, and I proceeded into the intersection with the green arrow active. A bus was traveling at a high rate of speed eastbound. The bus immediately slammed into engine 1 after running the red light. I was hit at the driver's compartment side. The engine was rocked and pushed a distance from the impact point. I looked over at the driver and raised my arms up to indicate, "What are you doing?" The driver said, as I could read her lips, it wouldn't stop. At impact, I observed the passengers on the bus thrown to the floor. I also looked back up, and our green arrow was still active, and she still had a clear red. I called our communications center, requested an assignment, and advised them of our location. There were no skid marks from the bus indicating any brake activation. Units were on scene immediately. The bus occupants and my crew were attended to also. My crew and I were transported to the emergency room for evaluations. I did have neck and back pains. There was nothing different I would have or could have done to avoid this collision. I exercised all possible safety procedures. There are traffic cameras at this intersection, and all of my personnel were belted at the time of the collision. Lessons learned. I have always been an advocate of seatbelt use, both on and off the job. I always make sure that all of my crew is belted, whether I am driving or the officer in charge of the apparatus. If they are not belted, then we go nowhere until they are. I always verbally check with my crew to acknowledge that they are belted and ready. I feel that if we are all not belted, then someone may have been ejected at impact when we were hit by the bus. I can say to all who have hesitations or just blatantly ignore seatbelt use, if you were involved in a similar incident, it would make you a believer. Wear seatbelts for your safety. To give you an indication of what non-belted passengers experience, all of the passengers on the bus that struck us were forcibly thrown to the bus floor upon impact. I witnessed this with my own eyes. In summation, I would urge drivers and passengers to use your seatbelt. It does not matter what your job may be. Also, wear a seatbelt in your personal vehicle. If you care about yourself or your loved ones, you will wear your seatbelt at all times when in a moving vehicle. It makes no difference if it's a law or a department policy. Wear it. Don't feel that any incident such as this could not happen to you. It can happen at any time. Belts are there. Wear them. John?
Thanks. Well, this report more than speaks for itself about the value of wearing seatbelts. And you can sit across the kitchen table and argue till you're blue in the face with firefighters about whether you should or should not wear them. But not only do the statistics, but the facts bear out that your likelihood of surviving an incident is much greater when the seatbelt is buckled, even at the inconvenience of some of our other previous practices like donning SCBA and PPE. One of the interesting factors here is the comparison between what happened to the belted firefighters and the unbelted occupants of the bus. The seat belts, though possibly inconvenient and maybe even ill-fitting, continue to be a must. The officer of this report should be also commended for the uncompromising safety leadership he demonstrates and describes in the report. We should all be that courageous when it comes to following through with some of our safety, more simple safety requirements. Our second report is 08134. It comes to us from a combination department in FEMA Region 8. We'll turn it back over to Jim.
Thanks, John. Event description. Our fire mechanic was conducting a survey of seatbelt condition of all apparatus in the department fleet. His investigation revealed that 9 seatbelts or retracting mechanisms were damaged beyond a safe operating condition. The biggest problem is damage occurring to belts caught in apparatus doors, causing cuts and abrasions to the belts. Based on this inspection, it was determined that 9 seat belts and mechanisms would be immediately replaced. This replacement of 9 belts indicated that we were replacing at least 1 belt in 50% of our apparatus. Of course, this was a non-budgeted item. But what price do we put on safety of our crews? The area apparatus vendor was extremely helpful in getting replacements ordered and shipped within 24 hours. Whether or not this classifies as a near miss or not, I am not sure. But when it came to our knowledge, we were not going to take a chance. I certainly do not think we are alone in this dilemma. Lessons learned. Regular inspections of apparatus occur on a daily, weekly, and monthly basis. Verifying the working and proper condition of the seat belts should be a daily requirement as well. Inspect your belts. We all have or should have a mandated policy concerning the wearing of a seatbelt, and this should indicate what the consequences of not wearing seatbelts are. Every week, we read about another firefighter death or serious injury from the lack of wearing a seatbelt. This week was no exception. However, we must also take the responsibility of ensuring that those belts comply with the standards and operate correctly. Replace defective or worn-out seatbelts. Be cautious about shutting seatbelts indoors and enforce your policy of mandating and wearing the seatbelt. John?
Well, this report is a great segue to part two of our podcast. Mike Wilbur will be joining us shortly. A couple of comments about the report itself. It points out the issue about firefighter or seatbelts in fire apparatus. The one question that did pop up, or the statement that was made there, was about whether or not this qualified as a near miss. And again, we'd like to take this opportunity to say that if you believe it's a near miss, then go ahead and submit the report. And we think this more than qualifies there. The issue of seatbelt use in apparatus is complicated by a number of factors that deal with fit, mechanical function, and just plain human behavior. But regardless of these complicating factors, the benefits of using that seatbelt and making sure it's buckled can't be overlooked or denied. In this department's case, in the submitter's case, he believes that he was probably just one step away from something worse than that. In the end, if you think about it, a seatbelt is really an extension of your PPE. The likelihood of being involved in an apparatus collision varies by a number of factors, but one frequently repeated comment is, I never really thought it was going to happen to me. So therefore, the only logical reaction to that unpredictability factor is to wear that seatbelt. We're going to return with Mike Wilbur in part two of our podcast after a brief message.
Attention all fire departments. We need your submission for the 2009 National Firefighter Near Miss Reporting Safety Leadership Award. With less than a month to go until a winner is chosen, now is the time to apply. Is your department an avid user and supporter of the Near Miss Reporting System? If so, you are a candidate. The only requirement is a one-page or about 500-word essay that describes how your department has used the Near Miss program to contribute to a more safety-conscious culture. The deadline is June 26, 2009, and essays can be submitted electronically at nearmiss@iasd.org or mailed to ISD headquarters at 4025 Fairridge Drive, Fairfax, Virginia. For more information, please visit the resources page of firefighternearmiss.com and click on 2009 Near Miss Award. Or you can call myself, Amanda McHenry, at 703-537-4832. Your department has done its part to contribute to firefighter safety through your support of the Near Miss Reporting System. Now let us show our gratitude and apply today. Remember, the deadline is June 26th.
Thanks, Amanda. And welcome back. Joining us now for part two of this edition of Near Miss Listen and Learn is Lieutenant Mike Wilbur with the Fire Department of New York. He's well-known and well-traveled subject matter expert on fire apparatus, and in particular the seatbelt issue on fire apparatus. So I want to say a special thanks out there to Mike for taking the time to talk to us today. Mike, I want to turn the episode over to you for just a brief moment here and give us a little bit of the background on how you got into the fire apparatus side of the fire service industry.
Well, unlike a lot of people, John, I had not always wanted to be a fireman, but was kind of ordered to join the volunteers by my dad, and my relatives had always been in the trucking business. They owned a rather large quarry business and blacktop business and had always grown up around trucks and trucking. And then when I joined the fire department and the fire service, I really started to be interested in those trucks and joined Spamfitz and apparatus, Antique Apparatus Club. That's nationwide. That's a great group. And just my interest in trucks just continued to grow. And as I went around with the my volunteer fire department and then finally with the city of New York, it just became extremely apparent that what we were trying to accomplish in the trucks just wasn't being accomplished, and that things had been kind of going on for a long time, that were, like you said, with the seatbelts not being user friendly, or with other things going on that just didn't appear to be as good or as safe as they could potentially be. So it started from there, and it's grown since then.
Great. Well, thanks very much for everything you've done for the industry so far. I know that anybody that's paying any the least bit of attention to the fire service today is familiar with your name and also your colleague, Tom Shand. The second question I want to ask here is the related to the topic in the episode here of using seatbelts. Can you tell us about your impressions of the seatbelt controversy in the fire service and the specific work that you've been doing to bring about a solution?
Yeah, thank you for those kind words. And we have worked, a small group of us, Chief Gordon Routley, a PhD by the name of Hong Wei from NIOSH, and a gal by the name of Jen Whitestone from a company called Total Contact, who is a body scan company who works with burn victims, have kind of joined forces under the auspices of the IAFC Health and Safety and Survival Section to champion this effort to change what's going on with seatbelts. I didn't realize a problem until I was at a conference, and I actually got yelled at by one of my best friends as we were trying to decipher the issue of whether to keep SCBA inside the cabs or not. And I came back to the firehouse here in the Bronx and asked my guys, why don't you wear seatbelts? And it was pretty interesting, the response. It wasn't because we don't want to, because we don't like safety, because they're in the way, because it slows us down. The simple reply was is that we can't, that they just don't work. And I said, okay. I said, I'll go grab my camera, and you go grab your bunker gear, and you show me why it doesn't work. And they really did, and it really opened my eyes. I think everybody in the industry knew that seatbelts and fire trucks were quite unuser-friendly at the time, but didn't realize the scope or depth of the problem. And these guys in bunker gear, with the limited space that there was to put them on along with their SCBA, it just became apparent that in many cases the seatbelts didn't work. It just didn't work. And that's not to give everybody out there an excuse as we strive to try and get people to buckle up, to not buckle up because it's a problem or it takes an extra minute or it's a little bit harder. It can be done with a great deal of perseverance in some cases, depending on your size, the apparatus builder, the space allowed for you to put them on, and how they actually work. Much has been done recently by several manufacturers to add different pretensioners, additional pretensioners, add additional length to get the seatbelts to accommodate firefighters in bunker gear. In the interim, we started looking into changing that, and basically where we are is we're in a third part of a three-part study. The first part of the study was doing some hand measurements. And, of course, you folks in Montgomery County were a big help in that, where over 500 firefighters were hand-measured, and it's part of a study called an anthropometric study, where we actually study and measure the a human body, and in this case, firefighters, and along with that, measure them in their bunker gear. And one of the things that we learned almost immediately is that the bunker gear adds almost a full one-third of girth to a firefighter. And that was never taken into account when seatbelts were first developed. Really simplistically, what we found is that somebody put car seatbelts in fire trucks, and then somebody ordered people to go use them and didn't take into account the specialty and the special folks that we have when we get dressed up in bunker gear. And one of the arguments that we had was, do fighter pilots, do they wear car seatbelts? Well, no. Do race car drivers wear just plain car seatbelts? Well, no. Then Those are specialties as well, and just like with those two jobs or those two endeavors, firefighters are special people, and we need to get a seatbelt developed that will accommodate firefighters quickly and safely and with all their bunker gear on. And as we started the second part of the study, we were got funding, grant funding to body scan over 120 firefighters from all different ethnic backgrounds and races, genders. We wanted a wide variety because the fire service now attracts a wide variety of folks. So we had Asian firefighters, we had Hispanic firefighters, we had Spanish firefighters, we had African American firefighters, we had female firefighters all take part in our limited study because we're all different kinds of body shapes and sizes and weights and heights and hands, and everybody is different in many ways. And to try to accommodate those sizes in a seatbelt setting. Where are we today? Phase two of that study was completed. The report came out, and basically one of the things we learned is that we're not allowing enough width and depth in seats in fire trucks to allow a 2009 firefighter in full bunker gear to sit down safely and to get dressed. We've learned that. We can prove that scientifically. And a couple other things, and where we're headed now, John, is we are embarking on phase three of this study. We have a good deal of the funding in place. It's going to be run by NIOSH, the National Institution of Occupational Safety and Health. We are in the methodology phase now and figuring out as far as measurements and body scanning what we want to keep from the phase two part where we body scanned 120 firefighters and what we want to refine. And starting in October, November timeframe of this year, we are going to embark on a four-city tour, and we are going to body scan, hand scan, head scan, feet scan 980 different firefighters. The cities that we're going to be visiting are going to be Fort Worth. We're going to be in the Baltimore City, D.C. area. We're going to be in the Chicago area. And then we're going to be in the Phoenix area to try and get a diverse cross-section of body types, ethnicities, and gender makeup to make this what could be one of the best studies ever done anthropometrically of firefighters, and to get gear and seats and seat belts and things that work a lot better than some of the things that we have to deal with now.
That's great. Mike, that's fascinating work. And I was working a couple of shifts when you guys came through Montgomery County, and the guys male and female firefighters both were very appreciative of the effort that was being made. It opened their eyes to the actual complications of how the solution to the problem can be reached. It's more than just adding another foot to the seatbelt and adding an additional pretensioner on there. They really had a better appreciation for the complication of what the solution is going to take. So my hat's off to you and all the folks you're working with out there.
Well, thank you very much. We appreciate that. And it's really true. The solution to this is just not that easy. We've had a lot of suggestions. One being, why don't you just make it kind of like an amusement ride and just have some padding that comes around and just wraps around the firefighter in the SCBA seat. And then we take an idea like that back to the engineers and find out that because of the dynamics of a crash versus riding in just an amusement ride, that solution wouldn't necessarily work. One of the solutions that's been bantered about that the engineers seem to like a good deal is to maybe try to make a move and incorporate seatbelts into SCBA, where the SCBA strap would actually act as a seatbelt, and where the SCBA would be held in by an air-actuated arm that could only be released once the air brake was applied on the vehicle, the maxi brake, so that we would never be able to run over a firefighter, as has happened in certainly in the past, where firefighters have exited the truck early and the trucks actually have run over firefighters. That just simply couldn't happen. In this case, the firefighters wouldn't be able to get out with their SCBA until the brake is engaged. That idea has passed very preliminary muster, but again, we're a long way from having a finished product. The study that we're doing now is a four-year study. We're just about at the end of October, November, we'll complete year one, and so we have three more years to go. It's time-consuming work. At times, it's frustrating, and in other times, it's really gratifying. But really fortunate to be put in a place to be able to do this work. And I have two sons on the job, and friends have sons on the job, being firefighters. And as my career wanes here, I may not necessarily reap the full benefits of what we're doing, but for sure my kids and the kids of other firefighters now will certainly reap those benefits.
Great. Well, one final question, Mike, before we conclude today. Based on everything you've learned to date, what advice would you offer to folks in the fire service to deal with the issue now as they go through their day-to-day shift, their response to the station? What's your recommendation?
Well, a couple things. The main arm of this has to be enforcement. You have to get serious about it. You have to have supervisors, whether they're line officers or whether they're chief officers, that are going to adopt a mandatory seatbelt policy, but more importantly, are going to be able to enforce it. And it really becomes a stark choice, as you well know. Having experienced line-of-duty deaths in my own firehouse here in the Bronx, you have a choice of whether you're going to confront this individual about the lack of a seatbelt and perhaps dole out some discipline, or go knocking on that person's door and telling his wife and kids or his mom and dad or his brother and sister that he's not coming home because you wanted to be his friend and you wanted to allow him or her to ride around on a fire truck without a seatbelt on. So that's one important component, is to have a policy, but not only have the policy, but have somebody with the guts enough to enforce that policy. And I think the second thing is to have some kind of, and this was debated, it's funny, we really didn't have, there wasn't really a system of how you get dressed or how this all occurs and in what order. And one of the things that we kind of agreed on is that with the exception of your helmet, you need to have all of your bunker gear on before you enter the cab. And then when you get in the cab, you need to put your SCBA on if the run calls for that. And then finally, you need to put your seatbelt on, and you need to get your helmet hooked in as per the NFPA change this year. And I think if you keep doing that over and over, it'll be just come second nature. And as you look at younger firefighters, particularly today, that have grown up with seatbelts, that have been mandated to wear seatbelts in cars, that wearing of the seatbelt comes a lot easier.
Great. Okay, Mike, well, I want to extend my deepest appreciation for you taking the time out to talk to us today, and best of luck with your future and the work. Hope you'll stop by in Charleston and visit us when we get down there. That's going to wrap up this episode of Near Miss Listen and Learn. I want to extend a sincere thank you to all the people that made this podcast and all the others possible. I'd like to single out Pete Matthews and Radio at Firehouse, Danny, our very capable producer and editor here, Jim Rist, the report reader, and also Todd Clist, the report reader before Jim. This episode's special guest, Mike Wilbur from FDNY, and, of course, Amanda McHenry, who oversees our program here, mans the desk and the phones when everybody else is out having the best of time. I'd also want to extend a special thanks to all of you who have taken an interest in the podcast and sent us your feedback. We very much appreciate your comments and are pleased you're finding the podcast useful. Keep those cards, letters, and comments coming. So as we close, have a good and safe week. Until next time, keep checking in with firefighternearmiss.com. Check out Mike Wilbur's website. Be vigilant, stay focused, and make sure you listen and learn.
If you have a comment on this program, drop us a line at radio@firehouse.com. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned to firehouse.com for more broadcasts like these. Or visit our website at www.firehouse.com/radio.